is my fury at the photographer. I'm delighted to be standing in the parking lot of a student bar in Portland with Miss Anastasia Steele. She puts her head in her hands, cringes, then peeks up at me, still mortified. Turning to the door, she glares over my shoulder. I assume it's at her friend. I'll see you inside, Jose says, but I don't turn to stare him down, and to my delight, she ignores him too, returning her eyes to mine. I'm sorry, she says finally, while her fingers twist the soft linen. Okay, let's have some fun. What are you sorry for, Anastasia?
The phone call, mainly being sick. Oh, the list is endless, she mumbles.
We've all been here, perhaps not quite as dramatically as you. Why is it such fun to tease this young woman? It's about knowing your limits, Anastasia. I mean, I'm all for pushing limits, but really, this is beyond the pale. Do you make a habit of this kind of behavior? Perhaps she has a problem with alcohol. The thought is worrying, and I consider whether I should call my mother for a referral to a detox clinic. Anna frowns for a moment, as if angry, that little V forming between her brows, and I suppress the urge to kiss it. But when she speaks, she sounds contrite.
No, she says. I have never been drunk before, and right now I have no desire to ever be again.
She looks up at me, her eyes unfocused, and she sways a little. She might pass out, so without giving it a thought, I scoop her up into my arms. She's surprisingly light. Too light. The thought irks me. No wonder she's drunk. Come on, I'll take you home.
I need to tell Kate, she says, as her head rests on my shoulder.
My brother can tell her.
What?
My brother Elliot is talking to Miss Kavanaugh.
Oh?
He was with me when you called.
In Seattle?
No, I'm staying at the Heathman. And my wild goose chase has paid off.
How did you find me?
I tracked your cell phone, Anastasia. I head toward the car. I want to drive her home. Do you have a jacket or a purse?
Yes, I came with both. Kristen, please, I need to tell Kate. She'll worry.
I stop and bite my tongue. Kavanaugh wasn't worried about her being out here with the overamorous photographer. Rodriguez. That's his name. What kind of friend is she? The lights from the bar illuminate her anxious face. As much as it pains me, I put her down and agree to take her inside. Holding hands, we walk back into the bar, stopping at Kate's table. One of the young men is still sitting there, looking annoyed and abandoned.
Where's Kate?
Anna shouts above the noise. Dancing, the guy says, his dark eyes staring at the dance floor. Anna collects her jacket and purse and, reaching out, she unexpectedly clutches my arm. I freeze. Shit. My heart rate catapults into overdrive as the darkness surfaces, stretching and tightening its claws around my throat.
She's on the dance floor,
she shouts, her words tickling my ear, distracting me from my fear. And suddenly the darkness disappears and the pounding in my heart ceases. What? I roll my eyes to hide my confusion and take her to the bar, order a large glass of water, and pass it to her. Drink. Eyeing me over the glass, she takes a tentative sip. All of it, I command. I'm hoping this will be enough damage control to avoid one hell of a hangover tomorrow. What might have happened to her if I hadn't intervened? My mood sinks. And I think of what just happened to me. Her touch. My reaction. My mood plummets further. Anna sways a little as she's drinking, so I steady her with a hand on her shoulder. I like the connection. Me touching her. She's oil on my troubled, deep, dark waters.
flowery gray. She finishes her drink, and retrieving the glass, I place it on the bar. Okay. She wants to talk to her so-called friend. I survey the crowded dance floor, uneasy at the thought of all those bodies pressing in on me as we fight our way through. Steeling myself, I grab her hand and lead her toward the dance floor. She hesitates, but if she wants to talk to her friend, there's only one way. She's going to have to dance with me. Once Elliot gets his groove on, there's no stopping him. So much for his quiet night in. With a tug, she's in my arms. This I can handle. When I know she's going to touch me, it's okay. I can deal, especially since I'm wearing my jacket. I weave us through the crowd to where Elliot and Kate are making a spectacle of themselves. Still dancing, Elliot leans toward me in mid-strut when we're beside him, and sizes us up with a look of incredulity. I'm taking Anna home. Tell Kate. I shout in his ear. He nods and pulls Kavanaugh into his arms. Right. Let me take Miss Drunk Bookworm home. But for some reason, she seems reluctant to go. She's watching Kavanaugh with concern. When we're off the dance floor, she looks back at Kate, then at me, swaying and a little dazed. Fuck. By some miracle, I catch her as she passes out in the middle of the bar. I'm tempted to haul her over my shoulder, but we'd be too conspicuous. So I pick her up once more, cradling her against my chest, and take her outside to the car. Christ, I mutter as I fish the key out of my jeans and hold her at the same time. Amazingly, I manage to get her into the front seat and strap her in. Anna. I give her a little shake because she's worryingly quiet. Anna. She mumbles something incoherent, and I know she's still conscious. I know I should take her home, but it's a long drive to Vancouver, and I don't know if she'll be sick again. I don't relish the idea of my Audi reeking of vomit. The smell emanating from her clothes is already noticeable. I head to the Heathman, telling myself that I'm doing this for her sake. Yeah, tell yourself that, Gray. She sleeps in my arms as we travel up in the elevator from the garage. I need to get her out of her jeans and her shoes. The stale stench of vomit pervades the space. I'd really like to give her a bath, but that would be stepping beyond the bounds of propriety. And this isn't. In my suite, I drop her purse on the sofa, then carry her into the bedroom and lay her down on the bed. She mumbles once more, but doesn't wake. Briskly, I remove her shoes and socks and put them in the plastic laundry bag provided by the hotel. Then I unzip her jeans and pull them off, check the pockets before stuffing the jeans in the laundry bag. She falls back on the bed, splayed out like a starfish, all pale arms and legs. And for a moment, I picture those legs wrapped around my waist as her wrists are bound to my St. Andrew's cross. There's a fading bruise on her knee, and I wonder if that's from the fall she took in my office. She's been marked since then, like me. I sit her up, and she opens her eyes. Hello, Anna, I whisper, as I remove her jacket slowly and without her cooperation. Gray lips, she mutters. Yes, sweetheart. I ease her down onto the bed. She closes her eyes again and rolls onto her side, but this time huddles into a ball, looking small and vulnerable. I pull the covers over her and plant a kiss in her hair. Now that her filthy clothes have gone, a trace of her scent has reappeared. Apples, fall, fresh, delicious. Anna. Her lips are parted, eyelashes fanning out over pale cheeks, and her skin looks flawless. One more touch is all I allow myself as I stroke her cheek with the back of my index finger. Sleep well, I murmur, and then head into the living room to complete the laundry list. When it's done, I place the offending bag outside my suite so the contents will be collected and laundered. Before I check my emails, I text Welch, asking him to see if Jose Rodriguez has any police records. I'm curious, I want to know if he preys on drunk young women. Then I address the issue of clothes for Miss Steele. I send a quick email to Taylor. From Christian Gray. Regarding Miss Anastasia Steele. Date, May 20th, 2011, 11:46 p.m. To J.B. Taylor. Good morning. Can you please find the following items for Miss Steele and have them delivered to my usual room before 10 o'clock? Jeans, blue denim, size 4. Blouse, blue, pretty, size 4. Converse, black, size 7. Socks, size 7. Lingerie, underwear, size small. Bra, estimate 34C. Thank you. Christian Gray, CEO, Gray Enterprises Holdings, Incorporated. Once it's disappeared from my outbox, I text Elliot. Anna is with me. If you're still with Kate, tell her. He texts by return. Will do. Hope you get laid. You so need it. Winking smiley face. His response makes me snort. I so do, Elliot. I so do. I open my work email and begin to read. Saturday, May 21st, 2011. Nearly 2 hours later, I come to bed. It's just after 1:45. She's fast asleep and hasn't moved from where I left her. I strip, pull on my PJ pants and a t-shirt, and climb in beside her. She's comatose. It's unlikely she's going to thrash around and touch me. I hesitate for a moment as the darkness swells within me, but it doesn't surface, and I know it's because I'm watching the hypnotic rise and fall of her chest, and I'm breathing in sync with her. In, out, in, out, in, out. For seconds, minutes, hours, I don't know. I watch her. And while she sleeps, I survey every beautiful inch of her lovely face. Her dark lashes fluttering while she sleeps. Her lips slightly parted so I glimpse her even white teeth. She mutters something unintelligible, and her tongue darts out and licks her lips. It's arousing. Very arousing. Finally, I fall into a deep and dreamless slumber. It's quiet when I open my eyes, and I'm momentarily disoriented. Oh yes, I'm at the Heathman. The clock at my bedside says 7:43. When was the last time I slept this late? Anna. Slowly I turn my head, and she's fast asleep, facing me. Her beautiful face soft in repose. I have never slept with a woman. I've fucked many, but to wake up beside an alluring young woman is a new and stimulating experience. My cock agrees. This will not do. Reluctantly, I climb out of bed and change into my running gear. I need to burn off this excess energy. As I change into my sweats, I can't remember the last time I've slept so well. In the living room, I fire up my laptop, check my email, and respond to 2 from Roz and 1 from Andrea. It takes me a little longer than usual, as I'm distracted knowing that Anna is asleep in the next room. I wonder how she'll feel when she wakes. Hungover. Ah. In the minibar, I find a bottle of orange juice and empty it into a glass. She's still asleep when I enter, her hair a riot of mahogany spread across her pillow, and the covers have slipped below her waist. Her t-shirt has ridden up, exposing her belly and her navel. The sight stirs my body once more. Stop standing here ogling the girl, for fuck's sake, Gray. I have to get out of here before I do something I'll regret. Placing the glass on the bedside table, I duck into the bathroom, find 2 Advil in my travel kit, and deposit them beside the glass of orange juice. With one last lingering look at Anastasia Steele, the first woman I've ever slept with, I head out for my run. When I return from my exercise, there's a bag in the living room from a store I don't recognize. I take a peek and see it contains clothes for Anna. From what I can see, Taylor has done well, and all before 9 o'clock. The man is a marvel. Her purse is on the sofa where I dropped it last night, and the door to the bedroom is closed, so I assume she's not left and that she's still asleep. It's a relief. Poring over the room service menu, I decide to order some food. She'll be hungry when she wakes, but I have no idea what she'll eat. So in a rare moment of indulgence, I order a selection from the breakfast menu. I'm informed it will take half an hour. Time to wake the delectable Miss Steele. She's slept enough. Grabbing my workout towel and the shopping bag, I knock on the door and enter. To my delight, she's sitting up in bed. The tablets are gone, and so is the juice. Good girl. She pales as I saunter into the room. Keep it casual, Gray. You don't want to be charged with kidnapping. She closes her eyes, and I assume it's because she's embarrassed. Good morning, Anastasia. How are you feeling? Better than I deserve, she mutters as I place the bag on the chair. When she turns her gaze to me, her eyes are impossibly big and blue, and though her hair is a tangled mess, she looks stunning. How did I get here? She asks, as though she's afraid of the answer. Reassure her, Gray. I sit down on the edge of the bed and stick to the facts. After you passed out, I didn't want to risk the leather upholstery in my car taking you all the way to your apartment, so I brought you here. Did you put me to bed? Yes. Did I throw up again? No. Thank God. Did you undress me? Yes. Who else would have undressed you? She blushes, and at last she has some color in her cheeks. Perfect teeth bite down on her lip. I suppress a groan. We didn't, she whispers, staring at her hands. Christ, what kind of animal does she think I am? Anastasia, you were comatose. Necrophilia is not my thing. My tone is dry. I like my women sentient and receptive. She sags with relief, which makes me wonder if this has happened to her before, that she's passed out and woken up in a stranger's bed and found out he's fucked her without her consent. Maybe that's the photographer's modus operandi. The thought is disturbing, but I recall her confession last night that she'd never been drunk before. Thank God she hasn't made a habit of this. I'm so sorry, she says, her voice full of shame. Hell, maybe I should go easy on her. It was a very diverting evening, not one that I'll forget in a while. I hope that sounds conciliatory, but her brow creases. You didn't have to track me down with whatever James Bond gadgetry you're developing for the highest bidder. Whoa, now she's pissed. Why? First, the technology to track cell phones is available over the internet. Well, the deep net. Second, my company does not invest or manufacture any kind of surveillance devices. My temper is fraying, but I'm on a roll. And third, if I hadn't come to get you, you'd probably be waking up in the photographer's bed, and from what I can remember, you weren't overly enthused about him pressing his suit. She blinks a couple of times, then starts giggling. She's laughing at me again. Which medieval chronicle did you escape from? You sound like a courtly knight. She's beguiling. She's calling me out. Again, and her irreverence is refreshing. Really refreshing. However, I'm under no illusion that I'm a knight in shining armor. Boy, has she got the wrong idea. And though it may not be to my advantage, I'm compelled to warn her that there's nothing chivalrous or courtly about me. Anastasia, I don't think so. Dark knight, maybe. If only she knew. And why are we discussing me? I change the subject. Did you eat last night? She shakes her head. I knew it. You need to eat. That's why you were so ill. Honestly, it's drinking rule number one. Are you going to continue to scold me? Is that what I'm doing? I think so. You're lucky I'm just scolding you. What do you mean? Well, if you were mine, you wouldn't be able to sit down for a week after the stunt you pulled yesterday. You didn't eat, you got drunk, you put yourself at risk. The fear in my gut surprises me. Such irresponsible, risk-taking behavior. I hate to think what could have happened to you. She scowls. I would have been fine. I was with Kate. Some help she was. And the photographer? I retort. Jose just got out of line, she says, dismissing my concern and tossing her tangled hair over her shoulder. Well, the next time he gets out of line, maybe someone should teach him some manners. You're quite the disciplinarian, she snaps. Oh, Anastasia, you have no idea. An image of her shackled to my bench, peeled ginger root inserted in her ass so she can't clench her buttocks, comes to mind, followed by judicious use of a belt or strap. Yeah, that would teach her not to be so irresponsible. The thought is hugely appealing. She's staring at me wide-eyed and dazed, and it makes me uncomfortable. Can she read my mind? Or is she just looking at a pretty face? I'm going to have a shower, unless you'd like to shower first, I tell her, but she continues to gape. Even with her mouth open, she's quite lovely. She's hard to resist, and I grant myself permission to touch her, tracing the line of her cheek with my thumb. Her breath catches in her throat as I stroke her soft bottom lip. Breathe, Anastasia, I murmur, before I stand and inform her that breakfast will be here in 15 minutes. She says nothing, her smart mouth silent for once. In the bathroom, I take a deep breath, strip, and climb into the shower. I'm half tempted to jerk off, but the familiar fear of discovery and disclosure from an earlier time in my life stops me. Eleanor would not be pleased. Old habits. As the water cascades over my head, I reflect on my latest interaction with the challenging Miss Steele. She's still here, in my bed, so she cannot find me completely repulsive. I noticed the way her breath caught in her throat and how her gaze followed me around the room. Yeah, there's hope. But would she make a good submissive? It's obvious she knows nothing of the lifestyle. She couldn't even say fuck or sex, or whatever bookish college students use as a euphemism for fucking these days. She's quite the innocent. She's probably been subjected to a few fumbling encounters with boys like the photographer. The thought of her fumbling with anyone irks me. I could just ask her if she's interested. No. I'd have to show her what she'd be taking on if she agreed to a relationship with me. Let's see how we both fare over breakfast. Rinsing off the soap, I stand beneath the hot stream and gather my wits for round two with Anastasia Steele. I switch off the water and, stepping out of the shower, grab a towel. A quick check in the steamed-up mirror, and I decide to skip shaving today. Breakfast will be here shortly, and I'm hungry. Quickly, I brush my teeth. When I open the bathroom door, she's out of bed and searching for her jeans. She looks up like the archetypal startled fawn, all long legs and big eyes. If you're looking for your jeans, I've sent them to the laundry. She really has great legs. She shouldn't hide them in pants. Her eyes narrow, and I think she's going to argue with me, so I tell her why. They were spattered with your vomit. Oh, she says. Yes, oh. Now, what do you have to say to that, Miss Steele? I sent Taylor out for another pair and some shoes. They're in the bag on the chair. I nod at the shopping bag. She raises her eyebrows. In surprise, I think. I'll have a shower, she mutters, and then as an afterthought she adds, thanks. Grabbing the bag, she dodges around me, darts into the bathroom, and locks the door. She couldn't get into the bathroom quick enough. Away from me. Perhaps I'm being too optimistic. Disheartened, I briskly dry off and get dressed. In the living room, I check my email, but there's nothing urgent. I'm interrupted by a knock on the door. Two young women have arrived from room service. Where would you like breakfast, sir? Set it up on the dining table. Walking back into the bedroom, I catch their furtive looks, but I ignore them and suppress the guilt I feel over how much food I've ordered. We'll never eat it all. Breakfast is here, I call, and rap on the bathroom door.
Oh, okay.
Anna's voice sounds a little muted. Back in the living room, our breakfast is on the table. One of the women, who has dark, dark eyes, hands me the check to sign, and from my wallet I pull a couple of 20s for them. Thank you, ladies.
Just call room service when you want the table cleared, sir,
Miss Dark Eyes says with a coquettish look, as if she's offering more. My chilly smile warns her off. Sitting down at the table with the newspaper, I pour myself a coffee and make a start on my omelet. My phone buzzes, a text from Elliot. Kate wants to know if Anna is still alive. I chuckle, somewhat mollified that Anna's so-called friend is thinking about her. It's obvious that Elliot hasn't given his dick a rest after all his protestations yesterday. I text back. Alive and kicking. Winking smiley face. Anna appears a few moments later, hair wet, in the pretty blue blouse that matches her eyes. Taylor has done well. She looks lovely. Scanning the room, she spots her purse.
Crap, Kate, she blurts.
She knows you're here and still alive, I texted Elliot. She gives me an uncertain smile as she walks toward the table. Sit, I say, pointing to the place that's been set for her. She frowns at the amount of food on the table, which only accentuates my guilt. I didn't know what you liked, so I ordered a selection from the breakfast menu, I mutter by way of an apology.
That's very profligate of you, she says.
Yes, it is. My guilt blooms, but as she opts for the pancakes, scrambled eggs, and bacon with maple syrup, and tucks in, I forgive myself. It's good to see her eat. Tea? I ask.
Yes, please,
she says between mouthfuls. She's obviously famished. I pass her the small teapot of water. She gives me a sweet smile when she notices the Twinings English breakfast tea. I have to catch my breath at her expression, and it makes me uneasy. It gives me hope. Your hair's very damp, I observe.
I couldn't find the hairdryer, she says, embarrassed.
She'll get sick.
Thank you for the clothes, she adds.
It's a pleasure, Anastasia. That color suits you. She stares down at her fingers. You know, you really should learn to take a compliment. Perhaps she doesn't get many. But why? She's gorgeous in an understated way.
I should give you some money for these clothes.
What? I glare at her, and she continues quickly.
You've already given me the books, which of course I can't accept. But these, please let me pay you back.
Sweetheart. Anastasia, trust me. I can afford it.
That's not the point. Why should you buy these for me?
Because I can. I'm a very rich man, Anna.
Just because you can doesn't mean that you should.
Her voice is soft, but suddenly I'm wondering if she's looked through me and seen my darkest desires.
Why did you send me the books, Christian?
Because I wanted to see you again, and here you are. Well, when you were nearly run over by the cyclist, and I was holding you and you were looking up at me, all, kiss me, Christian. I stop, recalling that moment,
her body pressed against mine. Shit. Quickly, I shrug off the memory. I felt I owed you an apology and a warning. Anastasia, I'm not a hearts and flowers kind of man. I don't do romance. My tastes are very singular. You should steer clear of me. There's something about you, though, and I'm finding it impossible to stay away. But I think you've figured that out already.
Then don't, she whispers.
What? You don't know what you're saying.
Enlighten me, then.
Her words travel straight to my cock.
Fuck. You're not celibate?
She asks. No, Anastasia, I'm not celibate. And if you'd let me tie you up, I'd prove it to you right now. Her eyes widen and her cheeks pink. Oh, Anna, I have to show her. It's the only way I'll know. What are your plans for the next few days? I ask.
I'm working today from midday. What time is it?
She exclaims in panic. It's just after 10. You've plenty of time. What about tomorrow?
Kate and I are going to start packing. We're moving to Seattle next weekend, and I'm working at Clayton's all this week.
You have a place in Seattle already?
Yes.
Where?
I can't remember the address. It's in the Pike Market District.
Not far from me.
Good.
So what are you going to do for work in Seattle?
I've applied for some internships. I'm waiting to hear.
Have you applied to my company, as I suggested?
No.
And what's wrong with my company?
Your company or your company?
She arches an eyebrow. Are you smirking at me, Miss Steele? I can't hide my amusement. Oh, she'd be a joy to train. Challenging, maddening woman. She examines her plate, chewing at her lip. I'd like to bite that lip, I whisper, because it's true. Her face flies to mine, and she shuffles in her seat. She tilts her chin toward me, her eyes full of confidence.
Why don't you?
She says quietly.
Oh, don't tempt me, baby. I can't. Not yet.
Because I'm not going to touch you, Anastasia, not until I have your written consent to do so.
What does that mean?
She asks. Exactly what I say. I need to show you, Anastasia, so you know what you're getting yourself into. What time do you finish work this evening?
About 8.
Well, we could go to Seattle this evening or next Saturday for dinner at my place, and I'll acquaint you with the facts then. The choice is yours.
Why can't you tell me now?
Because I'm enjoying my breakfast and your company. Once you're enlightened, you probably won't want to see me again. She frowns as she processes what I've said.
Tonight, she says.
Whoa, that didn't take long. Like Eve, you're so quick to eat from the tree of knowledge, I taunt her.
Are you smirking at me, Mr. Gray?
She asks. I look at her through narrowed eyes.
Okay, baby, you asked for this.
I pick up my phone and press Taylor on speed dial. He answers almost immediately. Mr. Gray?
Taylor, I'm going to need Charlie Tango.
She watches me closely as I make arrangements to bring my EC-135 to Portland. I'll show her what I have in mind, and the rest will be up to her. She may want to come home once she knows. I'll need Stefan, my pilot, to be on standby so he can bring her back to Portland if she decides to have nothing more to do with me. I hope that's not the case. And it dawns on me that I'm thrilled that I can take her to Seattle in Charlie Tango. It'll be a first. Standby pilot from 22:30 hours. I confirm with Taylor and hang up.
Do people always do what you tell them?
She asks, and the disapproval in her voice is obvious. Is she scolding me now?
Her challenge is annoying.
Usually, if they want to keep their jobs. Don't question how I treat my staff. And if they don't work for you? She adds. Oh, I can be very persuasive, Anastasia. You should finish your breakfast, and then I'll drop you off at home. I'll pick you up at Clayton's at 8 when you finish. We'll fly up to Seattle.
Fly?
Yes, I have a helicopter. Her mouth drops open, forming a small O. It's a pleasing moment.
We'll go by helicopter to Seattle?
She whispers.
Yes. Why?
Because I can. I grin. Sometimes it's just fucking great to be me. Finish your breakfast. She seems stunned. Eat. My voice is more forceful. Anastasia, I have an issue with wasted food. Eat.
I can't eat all this.
She studies all the food on the table and I feel guilty once more. Yes, there is too much food here. Eat what's on your plate. If you'd eaten properly yesterday, you wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't be declaring my hand so soon. Hell. This could be a huge mistake. She gives me a sideways look as she chases her food around on the plate with a fork, and her mouth twitches. What's so funny? She shakes her head and pops the last piece of pancake into her mouth, and I try not to laugh. As ever, she surprises me. She's awkward, unexpected, and disarming. She really makes me want to laugh, and what's more, it's at myself. Good girl, I mutter. I'll take you home when you've dried your hair. I don't want you getting ill. You'll need all your strength for tonight, for what I have to show you. Suddenly she gets up from the table and I have to stop myself from telling her that she doesn't have permission. She's not your submissive. Yet, Gray. On the way back to the bedroom, she pauses by the sofa.
Where did you sleep last night? She asks.
In my bed. With you.
Oh.
Yes, it was quite a novelty for me, too.
Not having sex.
She said the S word, and the telltale pink cheeks appear. No. How can I tell her this without it sounding weird? Just tell her, Gray. Sleeping with someone. Nonchalantly, I turn my attention back to the sports section and the write-up on last night's game, then watch as she disappears into the bedroom. No, that didn't sound weird at all. Well, I have another date with Miss Steele. No, not a date. She needs to know about me. I let out a long breath and drink what's left of my orange juice. This is shaping up to be a very interesting day. I'm pleased when I hear the buzz of the hairdryer, and surprised that she's doing what she's been told. While I'm waiting for her, I phone the valet to bring my car up from the garage and check her address once more on Google Maps. Next, I text Andrea to send me an NDA via email. If Anna wants enlightenment, she'll need to keep her mouth shut. My phone buzzes. It's Roz. As I'm on the phone, Anna emerges from the bedroom and picks up her purse. Roz is talking about Darfur, but my attention is on Miss Steele. She rummages around in her purse, and she's pleased when she finds a hair tie. Her hair is beautiful, lush, long, thick. Idly, I wonder what it would be like to braid. She ties it back and puts on her jacket. Then sits down on the sofa, waiting for me to finish my call. Okay, let's do it. Keep me abreast of progress. I conclude my conversation with Roz. She's been working miracles, and it looks like our food shipment to Darfur is happening. Ready to go? I ask Anna. She nods. I grab my jacket and car keys and follow her out the door. She peeks at me through long lashes as we walk toward the elevator, and her lips curl into a shy smile. My lips twitch in response. What the hell is she doing to me? The elevator arrives, and I allow her to step in first. I press the first floor button, and the doors close. In the confines of the elevator, I'm completely aware of her. A trace of her sweet fragrance invades my senses. Her breathing alters, hitching a little, and she peeks up at me with a bright, come-hither look. Shit. She bites her lip. She's doing this on purpose. And for a split second, I'm lost in her sensual, mesmerizing stare. She doesn't back down. I'm hard. Instantly. I want her. Here. Now. In the elevator. Oh, fuck the paperwork. The words come from nowhere, and on instinct, I grab her and push her against the wall. Clasping both her hands, I pin them above her head so she can't touch me. And once she's secure, I twist my other hand in her hair while my lips seek and find hers. She moans into my mouth, the call of a siren. And finally I can sample her. Mint and tea and an orchard of mellow fruitfulness. She tastes every bit as good as she looks, reminding me of a time of plenty. Good Lord. I'm yearning for her. I grasp her chin, deepening the kiss, and her tongue tentatively touches mine, exploring, considering, feeling, kissing me back. Oh, God in heaven. You are so sweet. I murmur against her lips, completely intoxicated, punch drunk with her scent and taste. The elevator stops and the doors begin to open. Get a fucking grip, Gray. I push myself off her and stand beyond her reach. She's breathing hard, as am I. When was the last time I lost control? Three men in business suits give us knowing looks as they join us. And I stare at the poster that's above the buttons in the elevator advertising a sensual weekend at the Heathman. I glance at Anna and exhale. She grins, and my lips twitch once more. What the fuck has she done to me? The elevator stops at the second floor, and the guys get out, leaving me alone with Miss Steele. You've brushed your teeth, I observe with wry amusement. I used your toothbrush, she says, eyes shining. Of course she has, and for some reason I find this pleasing, too pleasing. I stifle my smile. Oh, Anastasia Steele, what am I going to do with you? I take her hand as the elevator doors open on the ground floor, and I mutter under my breath, what is it about elevators? She gives me a knowing look as we stroll across the polished marble of the lobby. The car is waiting in one of the bays in front of the hotel. The valet is pacing impatiently. I give him an obscene tip and open the passenger door for Anna, who is quiet and introspective. But she hasn't run, even though I jumped her in the elevator. I should say something about what happened in there, but what? Sorry? How was that for you? What the hell are you doing to me? I start the car and decide that the less said, the better. The soothing sound of Daylieb's flower duet fills the car, and I begin to relax. What are we listening to? Anna inquires as I turn onto Southwest Jefferson Street. I tell her and ask her if she likes it. Christian, it's wonderful. To hear my name on her lips is a strange delight. She said it about half a dozen times now, and each time it's different. Today, it's with wonder at the music. It's great that she likes this piece. It's one of my favorites. I find myself beaming. She's obviously excused me for the elevator outburst. Can I hear that again? Of course. I tap the touch screen to replay the music.
You like classical music?
She asks as we cross the Fremont Bridge, and we fall into an easy conversation about my taste in music. While we're talking, I get a call on the hands-free. Gray, I answer. Mr. Gray, it's Welch here. I have the information you require. Oh, yes. Details about the photographer. Good. Email it to me. Anything to add? No, sir. I press the button and the music is back.
We both listen, now lost in the raw sound of the Kings of Leon, but it doesn't last long. Our listening pleasure is disturbed once more by the hands-free.
What the hell?
Gray, I snap.
The NDA has been emailed to you, Mr. Gray.
Good. That's all, Andrea.
Good day, sir.
I sneak a look at Anna to see if she's picked up on that conversation, but she's studying the Portland scenery. I suspect she's being polite. It's difficult to keep my eyes on the road. I want to stare at her. For all her maladroitness, she has a beautiful neckline, one that I'd like to kiss from the bottom of her ear right down to her shoulder.
Hell.
I shuffle in my seat. I hope she agrees to sign the NDA and to take what I have to offer. When we join I-5, I get another call. It's Elliot.
Hi, Christian. Do you get laid?
Oh, smooth, dude, smooth. Hello, Elliot. I'm on speakerphone and I'm not alone in the car.
Who's with you?
Anastasia Steele.
Hi, Anna.
Hello, Elliot, she says, animated.
Heard a lot about you,
Elliot says. Shit, what has he heard? Don't believe a word Kate says, she responds good-naturedly. Elliot laughs.
I'm dropping Anastasia off now. Shall I pick you up? I interject.
There's no doubt Elliot will want to make a quick getaway.
Sure.
See you shortly. I hang up.
Why do you insist on calling me Anastasia? She asks.
Because it's your name.
I prefer Anna.
Do you know? Anna is too everyday and ordinary for her, and too familiar. Those three letters have the power to wound. And in that moment I know that her rejection, when it comes, will be hard to take. It's happened before, but I've never felt this invested. I don't even know this girl, but I want to know her, all of her. Maybe it's because I've never chased a woman. Gray, get control of yourself and follow the rules, otherwise this will all go to shit. Anastasia, I say, ignoring her disapproving look. What happened in the elevator? It won't happen again. Well, not unless it's premeditated. That keeps her quiet as I park outside her apartment. Before she can answer me, I climb out of the car, walk around, and open her door. As she steps onto the sidewalk, she gives me a fleeting glance.
I liked what happened in the elevator, she says.
You did? Her confession halts me in my tracks. I'm pleasantly surprised again by Little Miss Steele. As she walks up the steps to the front door, I have to scramble to keep up with her. Elliot and Kate look up when we enter. They're sitting at a dining table in a sparsely furnished room, befitting a couple of students. There are a few packing boxes beside a bookshelf. Elliot looks relaxed and not in a hurry to leave, which surprises me. Kavanaugh jumps up and gives me a critical once-over as she hugs Anna. What did she think I was going to do to the girl? I know what I'd like to do to her. As Kavanaugh holds her at arm's length, I'm reassured. Maybe she does care for Anna, too.
Good morning, Christian, she says, her tone cool and condescending.
Miss Kavanaugh? And what I want to say is something sarcastic about how she's finally showing some interest in her friend, but I hold my tongue. Christian, her name is Kate, Elliot says with mild irritation. Kate, I mutter to be polite. Elliot hugs Anna, holding her for a moment too long.
Hi, Anna,
he says, all fucking smiles.
Hi, Elliot,
she beams. Okay, this is becoming unbearable. Elliot, we'd better go. And take your hands off her.
Sure,
he says, releasing Anna, but grabbing Kavanaugh and making an unseemly show of kissing her. Oh, for fuck's sake. Anna's uncomfortable watching them. I don't blame her. But when she turns to me, it's with a speculative look through narrowed eyes. What is she thinking?
Laters, baby, Elliot mutters, slobbering over Kavanaugh.
Dude, show some dignity, for heaven's sake.
Anna's reproachful eyes are on me, and for a moment I don't know if it's because of Elliot and Kate's lascivious display or... Hell, this is what she wants, to be courted and wooed. I don't do romance, sweetheart. A lock of her hair has broken free, and without thinking I tuck it behind her ear. She leans her face into my fingers, the tender gesture surprising me. My thumb strays to her soft bottom lip, which I'd like to kiss again. But I can't, not until I have her consent. Leaders, baby, I whisper, and her face softens with a smile. I'll pick you up at 8. Reluctantly, I turn away and open the front door, Elliot behind me.
Man, I need some sleep, Elliot says, as soon as we're in the car. That woman is voracious.
Really? My voice drips with sarcasm. The last thing I want is a blow-by-blow account of his assignation.
How about you, hotshot? Did she pop your cherry?
I give him a sideways fuck-off glare. Elliot laughs.
Man, you are one uptight son of a bitch.
He pulls his Sounders cap over his face and nestles down in his seat for a nap. I turn up the volume of the music.
Sleep through that, Lelliot.
Yeah, I envy my brother. His ease with women, his ability to sleep, and the fact that he's not the son of a bitch.
Jose Luis Rodriguez's background check reveals a ticket for possession of marijuana. There is nothing in his police records for sexual harassment. Maybe last night would have been a first if I hadn't intervened. And the little prick smokes weed? I hope he doesn't smoke around Anna, and I hope she doesn't smoke, period. Opening Andrea's email, I send the NDA to the printer in my study at home in Escala. Anna will need to sign it before I show her my playroom. And in a moment of weakness, or hubris, or perhaps unprecedented optimism, I don't know which, I fill in her name and address on my standard Dom sub contract and send that to print, too. There's a knock at the door.
Hey, hotshot, let's go hiking, Elliot says through the door.
Ah, the child has woken from his nap. The scent of pine, fresh damp earth, and late spring is a balm to my senses. The smell reminds me of those heady days of my childhood, running through a forest with Elliot and my sister Mia under the watchful eyes of our adoptive parents. The quiet, the space, the freedom. The scrunch of dry pine needles underfoot. Here in the great outdoors, I could forget. Here was a refuge from my nightmares. Elliot chatters away, needing only the occasional grunt from me to keep talking. As we make our way along the pebbled shore of the Willamette, my mind strays to Anastasia. For the first time in a long time, I have a sweet sense of anticipation. I'm excited. Will she say yes to my proposal? I picture her sleeping beside me, soft and small, and my cock twitches with expectation. I could have woken her and fucked her then. What a novelty that would have been. I'll fuck her in time. I'll fuck her bound and with her smart mouth gagged. Clayton's is quiet. The last customer left 5 minutes ago, and I'm waiting, again, drumming my fingers on my thighs. Patience is not my forte. Even the long hike with Elliot today has not dampened my restlessness. He's having dinner with Kate this evening at the Heathman. 2 dates on consecutive nights is not his usual style. Suddenly, the fluorescent lights inside the store flicker off, the front door opens, and Anna steps out into a mild Portland evening. My heart begins to hammer. This is it. Either the beginning of a new relationship, or the beginning of the end. She waves goodbye to a young man who's followed her out. It's not the same man I met the last time I was here. It's someone new. He watches her walk toward the car, his eyes on her ass. Taylor distracts me by making a move to climb out of the car, but I stop him. This is my call. When I'm out of the car holding the door open for her, the new guy is locking up the store and no longer ogling Miss Steele. Her lips curve into a shy smile as she approaches, her hair in a jaunty ponytail swinging in the evening breeze. "Good evening, Miss Steele."
"Mr. Gray," she says.
She's dressed in black jeans. Jeans again. She greets Taylor as she climbs into the back seat of the car. Once I'm beside her, I clasp her hand, while Taylor pulls out onto the empty road and heads to the Portland helipad. "How was work?" I ask, enjoying the feel of her hand in mine.
"Very long," she says, her voice husky.
"Yes, it's been a long day for me, too. It's been hell waiting for the last couple of hours."
"What did you do?"
she asks. "I went hiking with Elliot." Her hand is warm and soft. She glances down at our joined fingers, and I brush her knuckles with my thumb over and over. Her breath catches, and her eyes meet mine. In them, I see her longing and desire, and her sense of anticipation. I just hope she accepts my proposition. Mercifully, the drive to the helipad is short. When we're out of the car, I take her hand again. She looks a little perplexed. "Ah." She's wondering where the helicopter might be. "Ready?" I ask. She nods, and I lead her into the building toward the elevator. She gives me a quick, knowing look. She's remembering the kiss from this morning, but then, so am I. "It's only 3 floors," I mutter. As we stand inside, I make a mental note to fuck her in an elevator one day. That's if she agrees to my deal. On the roof, Charlie Tango, newly arrived from Boeing Field, is prepped and ready to fly, though there's no sign of Stefan, who's brought her down here. But Joe, who runs the helipad in Portland, is in the small office. He salutes when I see him. He's older than my grandpa, and what he doesn't know about flying is not worth knowing. He flew Sikorsky's in Korea for casualty evacuation, and boy, does he have some hair-raising stories.
"Here's your flight plan, Mr. Gray," Joe says, his gravelly voice betraying his age. "All external checks are done. She's ready and waiting, sir. You're good to go."
"Thank you, Joe." A quick glance at Anna tells me that she's excited, and so am I. This is a first. "Let's go." With her hand in mine once more, I lead Anna over the helipad to Charlie Tango. The safest Eurocopter in her class and a delight to fly. She's my pride and joy. I hold the door open for Anna. She scrambles inside and I climb in behind her. "Over there," I order, pointing to the front passenger seat. "Sit, don't touch anything." I'm amazed when she does as she's told. Once in her seat, she examines the array of instruments with a mixture of awe and enthusiasm. Crouching down beside her, I strap her into the seat harness, trying not to imagine her naked as I do it. I take a little longer than is necessary because this might be my last chance to be this close to her, my last chance to inhale her sweet, evocative scent. Once she knows about my predilection, she may flee. On the other hand, she may embrace the lifestyle. The possibilities this conjures in my mind are almost overwhelming. She's watching me intently. She's so close. So lovely. I tighten the last strap. She's not going anywhere. Not for an hour, at least. Suppressing my excitement, I whisper, "You're secure. No escaping." She inhales sharply. "Breathe, Anastasia," I add, and caress her cheek. Holding her chin, I lean down and kiss her quickly. "I like this harness," I mutter. I want to tell her I have others, in leather, in which I'd like to see her trust and suspended from the ceiling. But I behave, sit down, and buckle up. "Put your cans on." I point to the headset in front of Anna. "I'm just going through all the pre-flight checks. All instruments look good. I press the throttle to 1500 RPM, transponder to standby, and position beacon on. Everything is set and ready to go."
"Do you know what you're doing?"
she asks with wonder. I inform her that I've been a fully qualified pilot.